Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks80 and use code GraveTalks80 to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Today on The Grave Talks, finding peace. Chris Nuara grew up in a haunted house. As a child, he'd hear voices whispering to him that he was going to die, and his family was also going to die. Unexplained moments would plague his childhood as his parents would dismiss his experiences. It wasn't until his early 20s that Chris would discover he was not alone in this world as someone who grew up with ghosts. Today, Chris and his team, Trinity Paranormal Investigations of Long Island, look into homes and locations trying to help and calm clients who find themselves surrounded by the world of the undead and bring them peace.
Well, I grew up in a haunted house, so that helped a lot. I mean, for many years, and it only really happened to me and my brother, but more me. My brother had a couple of experiences, so like, it stayed away from my parents. So kind of like every time I told them, I learned early, you know, not to keep telling them because they thought it was crazy. So, you know, when I got older, I kind of went into it to make sure that I wasn't crazy, you know, that, you know, all my experiences didn't make me.
Yeah.
That I wasn't, you know.
And that can be that can be very difficult as a kid when you're having those experiences and it's kind of dismissed. And we'll talk more about that and kind of what that felt like. But take me back specifically in your case, when you were having these experiences, what were some of the first ones that you can remember that you had and you went, what is that? What is going on here?
I actually used to have this thing where it first started was when I moved into my grandfather's house, which was the house when I was around 7. And I would always see this weird figure in the window. And every time I would see it, it was almost like I had like sleep paralysis, but when I was awake, like when I was like standing up, not even laying down. And it was like, you know, I would stare at it for, and I couldn't stop looking at it, and I would get like an overwhelming feeling of like dread. And honestly, I don't know what that was. That actually stopped after a while, and then that's when all the you know, like the rapping and the footsteps and the whispering and stuff, you know, started.
Tell me about that.
I never actually saw anything then, but
tell me about the rapping and the whispers. What were those experiences like? Like, what was going on? Paint the picture for us.
You know, they would kind of like say my name a lot. You know, they would tell me that they didn't like me, you know, that they were going to kill my family and stuff like that.
Well, that's not normal things, obviously, because everyone who's had experiences like this, when you hear words of, you know, I'm hearing voices, I'm hearing whispers, I'm hearing knocks and things. Sometimes that's just kind of where it's left, where it's said, you know, oh, I'm just hearing some inaudible voices. I don't know what they're saying, but to hear something that specific of they're going to kill you, they're going to kill your family. Very negative, it sounds like.
Yeah. I don't think it was demonic. I did, when I was younger, I thought it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually started following Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of like, because that was the only people that really did it back then.
Sure.
And, you know, so I tried to, because I really thought maybe, like, you know, my mom had brought me to, like, a psychiatrist and, you know, thought that maybe I was here, you know, that I was schizophrenic. And,
yeah,
you know, the doctor said I was fine. Like, you know, I was totally fine, that there was nothing wrong with me.
What?
You know, that I had a overactive imaginary, you know, thing.
I was just going to ask you, when you did you ever explain to the doctor and said, this is what I'm hearing, this is the experiences, or was it your mom that was speaking for you at the time?
It was more my mom was speaking for me at the time. I kind of stayed quiet because, you know.
Sure. You said your brother also had the experiences. Was it the exact same sort of things? What was he experiencing?
No, he would more like just like, he would kind of like if he like walked in the room, he would see me like talking to somebody, and he would, you know, he would hear stuff. He would hear a lot of footsteps. You know, like the door would open by itself a lot, you know, especially our bedroom door. And he always just thought, oh, hey, maybe there's something wrong with the door. And then my dad even fixed it, and it still would happen. It would just constantly just open and close. Especially, like, it was like, actually, I would be walking towards the door, and it would open up for me. It was kind of weird. And it was, you know, it's terrifying as a kid.
Sure. Is there any specific memory or specific moment that really stands out to you from your younger years that really, you know, was traumatic, was one of those moments? It sounds like this happened quite frequently, but was there anything that stands out to you as, oh my God, this is, you know, I don't know how much more of this I can take.
Yeah, I kind of got blamed for killing my brother's hamster, and I don't know if it was honestly paranormal, but it would do like weird things like that. It would constantly take stuff, like, you know, it would put like one of my brother's items into my drawer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one time that, it was one of the times that my brother actually experienced it, that, excuse me, we were in the house, we came home from school, and my mother was out and my father was working and my grandfather was working too. So there was nobody home but me and him. And we went into my grandmother's house. And then we heard footsteps upstairs, so we got nervous because we had both came home early from school. So we ran upstairs, like, to explain ourselves, and there was, like, nobody up there. But, it was summertime. You know, our windows were open. You know, we didn't have air conditioning back then. And the whole house turned ice cold where you saw your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, freaked my brother out. Like, he still talks about it to this day. And even though he thinks I'm crazy for being a paranormal investigator, he still talks about that. Like, the whole room just turned ice cold. And you just felt the presence there. Like, you can hear footsteps, you know, scraping on the wall. And, we pretty much ran out of the house. And we waited for my grandfather to come home. At that time, he was the first home. But, yeah, that was one of the, you know, the craziest experiences that I was able to, like, collaborate with somebody that, you know, that I wasn't crazy.
When you had these experiences and then your grandfather gets home, how does the conversation go?
Well, my grandfather actually believed this because he said that he had, when he had first bought the home, because, you know, this was a home that my parents grew up, you know, my mom and my uncles grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said when he first bought the house and they were doing, you know, they made it into like a mother-daughter house from a regular house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mom, you know, two apartments.
Yeah.
And, when they were doing the renovations, he actually had to hire two different people because they were saying that they were getting messed with by an unseen force. And he had to hire two different contractors to do the job because two of them, you know, quit. And he said that he had a couple of experiences. But he said then it settled down and he never had them again for years. But he was also a very bad alcoholic, so he might have been drunk and not realized it.
Yeah, I mean, I that's an interesting thing. I know sometimes, you know, people will self-medicate almost to numb some of the things that are going on around them. And certainly if you're in an environment where it may not be the living that are tormenting you, but if it's something that is even more out of your control, you know, that's a path that, you know, you can understand how someone may go down. When you went to your parents and tried to explain some of these things, obviously your grandfather said he has had experiences there. So doesn't sound like he was super dismissive. But then you said it was your mother's father. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was my mother's father.
When you went to your mom and you tried to explain these things, you would almost think maybe she'd be a bit understanding considering she spent a good deal of her life there too. And her father had his own set of experiences. Did she have any experiences herself there?
Not that she's ever admitted to me. No,
yeah.
You know, she always said that the house creeped her out a little bit, but I mean, they grew up there and it was a very, you know, there was five siblings, you know, besides herself, well, with herself.
Sure.
You know, she has two brothers and two sisters. So, like, and they're all different ages. So, like, you know, they were running out of the house. There was always little kids there and nephews. So, no, she really never talked about any experiences.
Okay, back to our conversation in just a moment. First, I need to thank our supporter this week. It is HelloFresh. I have loved these guys for years, and I got to say, personally, honestly, they are a lifesaver right now during this pandemic time. I personally have been avoiding the grocery store as much as I can, so having this box show up on my doorstep, just like that, with everything I need, all the ingredients that I'm supposed to have for my recipe are there! Believe it or not, I've had that headache when I go to the grocery store. It's like you can't find things that you need. HelloFresh, the recipes, they are delicious. There's tons and tons to choose from every single week. Some of my favorite right now, balsamic fig chicken with roasted potatoes and lemony green beans. The Tuscan pork stuffed peppers. What a great summer recipe with pearl couscous, melted mozzarella, creamy dill chicken with roasted potatoes and green beans. If you're looking for a nice grill out one, I love this one. The shroom and Swiss pork burgers with potato wedges and creamy honey Dijon pepper. The list goes on and on. There are so many options for you no matter what type of diet you're eating from. They are going to have it for you, including low calorie, vegetarian, family friendly. Every single week, it's there for you, and they mix it up. There's so many good things to choose from. Fresh, high quality ingredients every week arriving right to your door. You can even do some add-ons and stuff too, like some fresh garlic bread to add to your pantry or some extra proteins if you want to get creative on your own. They have so many options for you. You choose your delivery day, preferences, skip a week, whatever you need. They are super, super flexible. Plus, HelloFresh right now is committed to making fresh, delicious food available now more than ever. They've taken extra steps to keep its employees and customers safe, and they've donated over 2.5 million meals to charity since 2019. And this year, stepping up their food donations amid all the coronavirus craziness that's going on. So it's a great company. It's great stuff. It's great products. Right now, you're going to love this. It makes it even better. HelloFresh is giving you quite an offer. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks80 and use code GraveTalks80 to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks80. Use code GraveTalks80. Get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. When you try to explain to your mom as a child and bring these incidences up to her that you were having, I know you said she dismissed them, but how did that go specifically?
Well, she got really nervous. That's why she brought me to the psychiatrist. She thought that, you know, because I have also people in my family that have mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So she got nervous that maybe, you know, I was, you know, going that way.
Sure.
So
How did she feel about that? Once you got in there and you got, you know, the diagnosis of there's nothing wrong with your son, he's completely fine, but you are still having these experiences. What was she thinking? What was she saying to you at that point?
She pretty much thought I had an overactive imagination.
Yeah.
And, you know, she always listened to me. She never oh, you're crazy, like, you know, something wrong with you. She would listen to me, and she believed that I believed it, you know. Mm-hmm. She didn't, like, think I was lying or anything.
Yeah.
But she just never got it, like, and I just kind of, you know, after a while, I just stopped. You know, as I got older, it got less, active, you know, like, you know, I got less activity. But, she never dismissive about it. She was just, you know, there's got to be an explanation for it, you know.
Did your father have any input?
No, I really wasn't really close with him. He was in and out a lot. And, mm-hmm. he was sure. Pretty much incoherent to that kind of stuff.
Okay. So as you're going through this, I mean, your brother having some experience is not exactly what you're experiencing. But you kind of on your own realizing there's stuff going on here. No one's really believing me. How are you processing all of it to try and deal with this as a kid?
Pretty much how all kids deal with problems. You know, I started drinking and stuff like that and smoking pot, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Almost trying to.
But besides that, I mean,
mentally,
you know,
escape.
But that's a whole other, you know, sure. Reasons for that too. But that was one of the reasons I started doing it very early.
Yeah. Kind of trying to escape from and mute down the feelings that, because I'm assuming you probably felt fairly alone, in that world. You said as you got a bit older, things were calming down a bit. Were they truly calming down, or were they being muted out more?
Probably being muted out more, because it was still, I still had experiences. I just wasn't, you know, I stopped kind of being scared of it, because it's so many years of just being frightened of it. I just had to say,
yeah,
you know, I got like, you know, I can't do that because I can't live my life like that.
Sure. So how long did you stay in the house until 18, or how long were you living there?
No, until about, I think I was right before I was about to be 16, I moved. My grandmother died, mm-hmm. and my grandfather sold the house, and we moved out with my aunt in Long Island, mm-hmm. which is where I live now. And because this was in Queens, in you know, in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And now I, you know, lived in Long Island since then. But I've actually, you know, when I moved to one of the apartments that we lived in, because we moved around a lot when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I went to three different high schools because, you know, we didn't really have too much money.
Sure.
But, so, you know, I got out of the house and, you know, then I started to, like, live in a house that didn't have any experiences. So then I was like, you know, well, maybe there's something to this, because maybe, you know, if I'm not having them now, obviously I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
So then that's when I, you know, I think I was, the first time I actually investigated a place, I didn't use any equipment or anything like that, because I didn't really have too much back then.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to a psychiatric hospital that had abandoned buildings on the property. I mean, it was still functional.
Yeah.
You know, this was in the mid-90s. And it was called Creemore. And we had some crazy, you know, like disembodied voices, screams. And, like, you know, I went with a bunch of friends, you know. You know, there, you know, drinking and stuff like that. Wasn't really investigating, but for me, I was like, I kind of wanted to see what was going on. And I figured any kind of hospital, I feel, would have some kind of paranormal activity,
mm-hmm.
you know, residual or intelligent, either way, you know?
Yeah.
But
and then finding other folks that may be interested or may have also had those experiences or their own version of experiences as well. And we can talk about that in just a bit. I want to finish up the conversation about the house that you had spent the first about 16 years of your life in. Earlier you said you didn't believe it was demonic. You said when you were younger, you thought maybe it was something dark. And I know that those terms get thrown around far too frequently. But as you look at it retrospectively and you feel that it wasn't demonic, what do you feel it was when you look back at that house and the experiences that you had?
I feel that it was definitely like, you know, it wasn't like a non-human. It was something that was human.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it didn't like me. And, you know, it didn't want me there. Well, not that it didn't want me there. I felt like it was feeding off me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was, you know, it was trying to make me scared so that it could feed off the negative energy of the fear kind of thing. Now that I look back at it, because I would always feel drained after my experiences.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I mean, they were pretty frequent. It wasn't like, it was just like, you know, every other like week or something like that. There was something happening at least, you know, once a day.
It was persistent. It was always there, just as people would be there.
Yeah, exactly.
Was there ever anything that you would discover or look back on and go, you know, I think if me doing this brought it out more or would aggravate it or make it come on stronger?
Definitely when any time I, you know, tried to talk to my mom or anybody else about it, it definitely would get more active.
Really?
And that's when I would start to hear that, like, you know, if you, you know, we're going to kill your family. And
mm-hmm.
it was definitely more than one, too. It was, I don't know how many, but the weird thing is that my grandfather bought that house when it was first built. He was the first owner. So like, I don't understand how it could have been haunted. I mean, now being years of investigating, I probably was the land of some sort, you know?
Sure. Obviously you look back onto the property in that part of the country and there was likely other people that had been there prior to the house in some sort of a settlement way, shape or form. When you look back at the history of the house, you just said that he bought it brand new. Have you ever done any research onto the property or to the area?
Yes, there was actually a Native American tribe that had lived there. I can't pronounce the name,
mm-hmm.
but they were, you know, because back then, where I lived in Queens was actually Long Island, you know, because it's all the same. You know, they just consider it different because it's part of the boroughs, the five boroughs.
Sure.
But it really is Brooklyn and Queens are attached to Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that, like, you know, all the Native American tribes that, you know, frequented Long Island, I think there was like five of them. And so I'm guessing it was probably Native American land because this house was built after, you know, the prior to, after World War II. You know, it was one of those Levittown, you know, where they used to build those old, you know, all the houses right next to each other kind of thing.
Sure.
So I'm sure that, you know, there was somebody living there before. After, and I think it was Native American sometimes.
After you moved out, did you ever go back and visit the house?
I went past it. I never actually went, you know, tried to get inside of it.
Was it out of the family at that point? Did the whole family move out?
Yeah, the whole family moved out.
Okay. Have you ever been curious to go and knock on that door and say, hey, I used to live here, just curious, how are things today? You know, I don't know how you'd phrase that without scaring the people right there at their doorstep, but have you ever contemplated doing anything like that?
Yeah, I have actually. I wanted to a few times.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like even after I moved from Queens to Long Island, I still had a lot of friends out here.
Yeah.
Out there.
Sure.
So I would visit them and, you know, go hang out with them even after high school, you know, when I was in college.
Sure. When was your first experience of connecting with someone else that had experiences as well, that made you maybe not feel so alone in this world of having had paranormal times in your life?
Well, probably first was, you know, because I was, you know, 1920 when the paranormal show started, you know, started.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Ghost Adventures a little later, but Ghost Hunters, Paranormal State, and all those shows.
Sure.
So I kind of would relate with them, you know, like, you know, if they put, you know, back then, now I'm like, you know, I kind of like with the shows, I think it's just entertainment,
yeah.
You know, not that they don't get real evidence, but I think a lot of it's made up, but
sure.
But back then, you know, I thought that, you know, these people were real paranormal, you know, not, they are real paranormal investigators, but what I meant is I thought everything that I saw was real.
And, yeah. You didn't realize the level of production that goes into the shows at the time.
Yeah. And so, you know, so I kind of like, you know, I would tell people here and there. I kind of kept to myself a little bit about it until I started investigating. But I kind of did that for a long time by myself. You know, I have a place over near me called Kings Park Psychiatric Center.
Mm-hmm.
And it has over 60 buildings that used to be, you know, it used to be a psychiatric hospital back. You know, it closed down in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
The only bad thing is that it's illegal to go there. Like, you know, the cops don't really mess with you. But, you know, they look out for kids and stuff like that, doing graffiti and drinking and stuff.
Sure.
But we just go there, you know, we go with our equipment and stuff. But I've been going there for years, and that place is, like, one of the most wanted places I've ever been. Like, I think it puts Waverly Hills, I've never been to Waverly Hills, but I know a lot of people that have been there,
mm-hmm.
and they say this place is, like, you know, this place is, it's pretty much untouched.
Sure.
You know, it's been abandoned, and only people that really go there are kids. You know, there's been maybe a couple of YouTubers that go there, but
yeah,
that place is definitely like one of the most haunted places I've been around me. Anyway.
When you were in your late teens, early 20s, and some of those shows were starting to come out and you're starting to see people vocalize, hey, this stuff is real. We've had these experiences and, you know, it's on television. It's there in front of you. It's not just some random person that you met at the end of a bar. That's like, you know, hey, I got a ghost stories too. What was that like? I mean, did you feel like maybe you were very alone in this world of having those experiences at that time? Or did you know there's got to be other people out here?
No, I knew had to be other people out there because, you know, especially being on TV and, you know, there was other shows too. They had like the, you know, like Shining Files and all that kind of stuff back in the 90s. But, you know, I got more and more when I started to like, I felt more comfortable with myself. That's exactly why I started to investigate,
mm-hmm.
was I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy. I wanted to see if this was real,
yeah.
you know, if it was like something I made up in my head.
Sure.
And, so, you know, I investigated for a long time by myself like that because I wanted to know what it was. I didn't know if it was, you know, because back then, I didn't know if it could have been, for all I knew, it could have been aliens, interdimensional beings. You know, there was so many different theories about what this stuff was.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely felt alone for a long time about it, but I don't anymore.
So you said you investigated by yourself for a while, meaning just you with some equipment, kind of going out and visiting specific locations?
Yeah, like, you know, with just an old Kodak camera, you know, the old ones.
Sure.
And like the old recorders that you used to put the little tapes in.
Yep. Yep.
I used to go into like places, you know, any place that was like, you know, had any kind of lore that was haunted. You know, back then I would go for the myths and legends.
Sure.
But now I know that's stupid. Like, you know, like you have to go by, you know, factual history.
Sure. You said earlier, Creemore Hospital, that it was a place that you had gone to, you know, quote unquote, as an investigation, more so a bunch of teens going, this is a spooky place, let's go check it out. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Was that literally like one of the first places or the first place that you had gone to that was what you believed to be haunted? And how did you handle that?
But that was the first place that besides my own home that, okay, you know, that I had an experience in.
Yeah.
When we were going, we had something, you know, I had seen a trick on from Lorraine and Ed Warren, like where you knock on something and they ask them to knock back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was doing it on cue. And all my friends were like freaked out. They're like, yo, you like, they literally thought like I was like playing a trick on them or something. Like, you know, like they still like a couple of, one of the friends that I'm still friends with on Facebook, he still talks about it. Cause now he sees what I do. He's like, oh, you were doing that back even when we were kids, you know?
Sure.
So
when you continued that in those investigations and you went to a place like that, tell me about some of the other experiences and some of the locations that you visited specifically as you were trying to find answers, trying to figure out what exactly it was that was going on.
That would be the Kings Park I was telling you about.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, when I first got, you know, I think what really got me really going a lot was when I started getting EVPs, like, you know, disembodied voices on the recorder that, you know, there was, I didn't hear at the time. And, I would listen back and I'm like, it was like, there was nobody there. I know I was there alone. You know, it's 2 a.m. You're not, you know, the only people you're going to run into is kids, but you would hear them from a mile away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, 'cause they're, you know, people are loud and stuff. So, you know, you hear footsteps, you know, you would hear them. You would know that there was people there. It's a different, you know, a different feeling when there's just people there. But when I first heard that EVP, and I'm like, there's no way that there was a voice there. Like, there's got to be something to this. And then I started to feel better about it a little bit.
Sure.
And then, like, you know, I started to talk to more people that investigated. You know, like I would watch their videos, I would contact them, you know, from YouTube and stuff like that. And
what was that first EVP like? What did you hear?
I had asked if there was anybody there with me, and something sounded like a male and like almost like a hissing voice said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like clear as day. Like it was definitely a class, what you would call a class A EVP.
Yeah.
You know, back then I didn't know what that would even mean.
So
sure. I was pretty much just going in there, like, you know, thrill seeking, trying to get that experience to find out what's going on. You know, not even thinking that, like, there's a whole field about it, like, you know, a whole scientific field now, you know, and equipment and stuff that you can use. And
as you're out there and you're trying to find these answers, like you had said, you wanted to know what this was, everything going through your mind from, you know, the ghosts of the living to aliens to you name it. The possibilities are quite vast. What does it look like to you where there's, I always call it like the ghost family tree, where there's so many variants as to what people experience and what these things may be. Tell me how you view that today. What do you think these things are that are out there? And I know it's an extremely vast question, but tell me, in your opinion, what are ghosts that are out there? Probably many different things, but what have you experienced in your research?
I definitely think that there are, you know, I think there's a lot of trapped spirits here. You know, there was like a traumatic event, like, you know, like a somebody was murdered and they didn't know that they were dead and they got kind of stuck here. And the reason why also, you know, my team, actually, we do a lot of demonic cases too. And that's the reason why I knew what, when I was a kid, wasn't demonic, because I came across something demonic and it was completely different to what I experienced when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, just, you could feel it, like, when it's, you know, like when it's something that's evil like that. For me, anyway, you know, I don't know what your beliefs are, but I'm a, you know, a Christian, so our whole team is actually Christian.
What was that experience? What was it like? Walk me through that, when you had a run-in for the first time with something that you believed to be demonic.
We went to an investigation. It's got to be like maybe a year and a half ago. And we went to this lady's house. And this was actually with another team that I was working with. And as soon as we walked in, you know, she told us the claims and telling that she got growled at. And, you know, my friend had thought, you know, he'd been doing it for like 20 years. And he said that, you know, as an investigator, and he said that he thinks that it could be a demonic oppression. So when we went there, as soon as I walked in the door, like, you just got knocked with this energy. Like, and I started feeling sick to my stomach. I mean, everybody that was there, all the investigators threw up. As soon as I was sitting there, we were just getting the claims for her. We were videotaping, you know, her claims, you know, answering her questions and doing the interview. And something, it was literally like grabbing my bicep, like squeezing it hard. And I'm like, like, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then later on at the night, I was in the room and I got like, it literally sounded like a wolf growling at me, like right next to me. And, you know, my friend was actually doing the cleansing at the time. He was doing the, you know, the removal. And right after he did the removal, the lady started vomiting blood, you know, coming from her mouth and her nose. It was so like I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in a movie or something, like The Exorcist.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just such a different feeling. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just almost like when you were around it, like, you felt like you could, like, everything was spinning, like a vertigo almost feeling.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Chris Nuara about finding peace. In part two of our conversation, what was it like for Chris to come across something he believed to be demonic? How is he prepared to deal with something so dark? How does a location become infested with something wicked? Has there ever been a case where Chris felt it was too intense for him and his team to investigate? And what are the ultimate goals that Chris and his team have when it comes to investigating the paranormal? We'll discuss all of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You can do so by going to patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you access to part two of this interview and every single interview we've ever done. Access to hundreds of interviews in their entirety. Your support is what keeps this program on the air. Without it, we simply would not exist. Find out more about Chris and his team on Facebook. Search Trinity Paranormal Investigations of Long Island. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.